This is another nice. It's from Lau. It shows the locations of the land concessions, and essentially what it shows is that the concessions granted to foreign companies are not in the really poor areas. It's the best land, which is, you know, it's not surprising. But sometimes you hear that, that this process of granting concessions to foreign interests for non-food crops in particular, biofuels, etc., that will be a tool to reduce rural poverty. But actually, it's just taking the best land, and that's the land that's closest to the markets, closest to transport, closest to services. And this map does it quite well. What it does is correlate the incidence of poverty with the areas of the sites of the concessions. And for example, these are high poverty areas. There's very few concessions in the really high poverty areas. So I thought I'd get it. Now, this is a particular interest of mine, is that from a legal point of view, you often hear really simplistic analysis of some of these processes. And for example, the FAO guidelines on responsible land tenure for agricultural investments. They say existing rights to land must be protected, right? And then the human rights lawyers talk about, oh, there's a right to property, and land grabbing is breaching the right to property. The truth is that the law is manipulated to deny rights to these people. It's not a case of recognising existing rights, because in legal terms, they don't have those rights. And that has to be recognised, that the state is part of the problem here. And the classic example is Indonesia. This is the official forestry map for Indonesia. Now, to simplify it a little bit, the forestry is regarded as state-owned land in Indonesia. The entire province of West Papua, even the urban areas, are classified as forest land. It's state-owned land. Most of Sumatra, almost all of Kalimantan. And this includes areas where there's mining concessions, biofuel concessions. It's all deemed to be forest land, and therefore the people living in those areas, and some people say as many as 70 million are affected, have real trouble proving that they have legal rights to land. So it's not a case of saying you've got a right to property, you've got a right, let's recognise existing rights. The state has taken those rights or denied that those rights ever existed. And I think a lot of our responses assume a certain degree of legality on the part of the state and that it's not present. And we have to take that into account in shaping responses. So the other great example where it's a problem of state land is actually Cambodia, where, you know, for all the World Bank's talk of land titling, up to 80% of Cambodia is deemed to be state public or state private land. And so the land law says, if you've been in possession of land for a five-year period, for a certain cut-off date, you get ownership. And that sounds great. Okay, it's a rule of possession. But the reality is that that rule does not apply to 80% of the country. We're experiencing the same issue in East Timor, where this is very old map. They still include it as part of Indonesia. Where the state has all the capacities and discretions to determine which areas are state land. They say, that's state land. We don't have to do compulsory acquisition of rights because you guys are illegal. And it's almost impossible to push back against those declarations. So that's going to affect my discussion of responses. So the problems, we're familiar with the problems, increasing human mobility, it's outstripping housing supply. Poverty, obviously a major issue, because the system is set up that if you want adequate shelter, you need to have secure rights to that land. To get secure rights to that land, you need money. The process of having your rights recognised costs money. Credit costs money, obviously. and land prices are too high for the poor. Another issue is that in many cases there are these sort of bottom-up systems that have developed in these settlements, and yet the structure of law doesn't accommodate them, and also particularly the mindset of the land administration agencies. They don't have technical mechanisms to incorporate a localised system into their national cadastral mapping and database arrangements, and I'll talk about that as well, this one particularly as well. We all know this, so the urban poor become illegal for a whole range of reasons. Zoning, taxes, they don't have building approvals, restrictions on migration, they shouldn't be there, you know, according to the law. And then, of course, you've got the global demand for land. The one thing I haven't mentioned there is, obviously, you would add to that climate change and natural disasters, increasing levels of human mobility, and there are two issues perhaps we can talk about this afternoon particularly. One is that my experience with natural disasters and with conflicts is that land becomes a major issue in terms of sequencing shelter. Is that a lot of shelter agencies don't know what to do about land tenure, that proving that the shelter beneficiary has rights to that land. And I'll give you one example. In Aceh after the tsunami, one National Red Cross organisation got advice from their Geneva lawyers, well, they have to show a land title certificate before we can build a house for them. And 2 years later, those people were still displaced, right? Because in Geneva that makes sense, get a land title certificate. In these, most of these countries, it doesn't make sense, and there has to be an alternative to that. Don't listen to your lawyers. Major recommendation.